The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
You know, if I could play music without getting copyright violated by the Google gods, I probably would have opened with the Talking Heads' Life During Wartime today, because that's where we are. And sadly, with war comes lots of propaganda, and there's lots of it out there today. Not only have I been sort of, I hate to say it, but vicariously experiencing what's going on in Ukraine through a new friend. I'll give you all the details in a moment. But my goodness, I feel like I've been fighting battles here via the Twitter machine, because, gee, a lot of people are just seemingly really invested in both sidering, making it seem like, oh, well, you know, there's two sides to this. You know what? No, there aren't. One country led by one madman invaded another country who did nothing to them, to the first country, nothing. And now the madman is unleashing a world of weaponry and troops upon said country. Russia has invaded Ukraine. Now, you know that the Fox apologists for Putin have all of a sudden done an about face, because I guess they saw the polling that showed they were on the wrong side. There's a little distortion. Yeah, I know. I bet it's from here. Hold on. Maybe if I bring it down. Hopefully that helped. Putin put out this narrative that he's going to denazify Ukraine. Let me share with you a tweet that I just retweeted from somebody that I really, really like and respect. And that would be Sacha Baron Cohen. And now I can't find it, of course, because my like category is not working correctly. But basically, let me see if I can just... No, I don't even know what his Twitter handle is. He said, irony alert. The country that's claiming that they're invading because Nazis are ruling the place has the only Jewish president in all of Europe. Oh, and the first country just bombed a Holocaust memorial site. One of these things just doesn't fit. Here, John of Rosas. Aravosis just tweeted, Putin just bombed the Kiev Holocaust Memorial, the site of a mass grave containing the bodies of 34,000 Jews massacred by the Nazis in 1941. But sure, Putin invaded to stop the Nazis. And the president is Jewish. What more do you need? Then there was the guy who I just finally had to block, who's like, well, you know, yeah, maybe... Putin's wrong, but you know, there were Nazis in Ukraine going back. Yeah. So take a look at our American military, shall we? Look who makes up our armed forces. And I promise you, you're going to find a lot of Trumpers there. A lot of people who blindly follow the mushroom penis guy, and down some dark alley into the Netherlands. Not the country of the Netherlands. You know what I'm talking about. I know it doesn't make sense because I've been sitting here swatting flies all day. It is frustrating beyond words. And, you know, the both-siderisms is really starting to bug me. One party is... obviously in the wrong here. And that's Vladimir Putin, who wants to put the old gang back together. He wants to reconstitute the Soviet Union. He doesn't like, you know, what did Ukraine do to offend Putin? They refused his rule. They refused to bow down and say, sure, you can control our lives like you do Russia. They said it really overmodulated, huh? Okay, hold on. Let's see if any of this helps. Okay, you guys, tell me if that's any better. Oh, where? Why is that? Okay, so you guys have to tell me what stream I'm overmodulated on. Because I don't know. All right, I'm looking at the Progressive Voices stream, and that is not, certainly not over. Oh, I bet I know where it's coming from. Hold on one second. I know where I can bring it down a little bit. La, la, la. Excuse me, I'm playing engineer now, because, you know, I go from producer role to engineer role to back again. All right, I'm going to fix it right here. And you will be amazed at my prowess. Oh, I see what happened. Shoot, this got boosted all the way up. Okay. All right, now we can bring it up again. All right, that should be better. You guys let me know, but that should be a whole lot better. Okay. So anyway, I have been, you may remember, yeah, it's better. You may remember that I reached out yesterday to Ukraine. I found this hostel, hotel, cheap, mostly meant for kids, for students, in the middle of Kiev. And it had great reviews and everything. And when I called, a woman answered the phone named Tatiana. And she, sometimes I'm a little out of the loop yesterday. So I aired our phone call because I called her before I went on the air yesterday because I didn't want to spend a half hour trying to reach somebody who spoke English. So I got a hold of Tatiana, and she touched something inside me. She owns this hostel. She owns this place of business. And she said she hadn't been above ground in 5 days, basically since the war started, since they were invaded. So she asked me, I said, what can we do to help you? Please tell me what we can do to help you. And she said, if you would send me, I thought she was saying to text her, and then she would send me back information on what they needed. Well, she said Telegram, and me being a little slow sometimes, didn't remember that Telegram is a communications app, an encrypted communications app. But a couple of you guys, you listeners who are awesome, reminded me. And sure enough, I got Telegram installed, and I texted her last night. I woke up this morning. So funny. I get up very early. So I'm up at like 6 o'clock. I'm in the kitchen. I'm getting Jackson's breakfast together, the dog. And I hear this, this notification sound from my phone, and I pick it up. And sure enough, there's a message from Tatiana. And what it was is, three emojis of the praying hands. And that just destroyed me. That was at, 6:50 a.m. I had texted her last night. Then this morning, I saw that, and I wrote back. I wrote, hi. Took me a while to realize what you meant by Telegram, but I finally did. My radio listeners and I want to know how we can help. And so there's a reason. I was supposed to call her right now. You know what? I'm going to scroll to the end of our little communication chain. And we've been talking back and forth all day today. All day today. And what she said, first... I sent her a pretty lengthy message. It was 9:15 a.m. And then I didn't hear back from her for 2 hours. I get a message from her at 11:07, talking Eastern time this morning. And she sent me this picture that I'm putting up on the screen. And you'll be able to see it in just a second. And it's a photograph of the TV station that had just been bombed. There's the picture. The television station in Kiev. They bombed. And she wrote to me and said, we were all this time in the shelter without communication. We do not stop sound siren. And in the photo, it is our television tower. So they were down there for about 2 hours. And I'm telling you this now because we were set. I was supposed to call her now. But let's see what time it was. Scroll. It was 3:38 p.m. So coming up on 2 hours, close. She wrote, we have an air alarm. We run to the basement. And I said, oh, God, no, please stay safe. Let me know when you're back. Now, I can try calling her now, but I have a feeling they're going to be in the basement and it's not going to go through. But you know what? Let's give it a shot anyway and see what happens. Let me bring this up and Tatiana. And there she is. Let's try calling her again and see what happens. I have a feeling they're down in the basement and she's not going to be able to answer the phone, but we'll find out. Anyway, we have made contact. She has family here. She's got two sisters, I believe, in the U.S., one in Dubai. I'll share with you our chat log because I have a feeling she's not going to be there to answer the phone right now. But she did send me a few things, some information. Yeah, this she would have answered by now. So they're still down in the bomb shelter, I guess. So let me share with you a little bit of our back and forth. First, she sent me information on and I'm going to post all of this on my blog where I post today's show. So it'll be at NicoleSandler.com/3-1-22. That's always the format. That's how I post each day's show, NicoleSandler.com/ and the date with day, month, day, year. Sorry, I'm a little slow sometimes. So I'll post this. So no, she's not sleeping, Hernan. They're in the bomb shelter. They had air sirens go off. So she sent me one information with routing numbers. Should you care to help them with money? What she said, let me read it to you. She said, my friends and I are now raising money for walkie-talkies and helmets. We have already ordered body armor, but it will all come in a few days and the soldiers need it now. We have closed foreign transfers, so you can only help with humanitarian aid. And I said, no foreign transfer, so we can't send money. She said, I'll now find out how you can help more and I'll write to you. Pray for us. Belarus attacked us an hour ago. That was just moments before 7 o'clock this morning, Eastern time. And I just said, oh my God, we are. Now, I'm not a praying person, but I do whatever I can to send positive thoughts. I think it all works in the same manner. Anyway, so she sent me more information about a way to help the troops. Again, I'll post all that if you want to do that. And then she sent me this website, and this is fascinating. It's the website for Nuremberg 2022. The URL, though, is Nuremberg 2022.org. And when you go there, it says Nuremberg 2022, let's punish Putin's crimes together. This site was created to collect facts about the crimes of Putin's army against the civilian population of Ukraine. You can help to punish Putin, send war crime facts to the post office. So you can either do it, I guess, through the website, or you can send them to Nuremberg2022@gmail.com. I think that's more for the people in Ukraine who are witnessing these atrocities than us. Nothing we can add to that, but you can look at it. And when you go to it, Nuremberg2022.org. It's really sad. It's Putin's crimes. A lot of it, some of it is written in Cyrillic, Russian or Ukrainian. Banned vacuum bomb. Here's somebody who posted a banned vacuum bomb just 2 hours ago. Here, a vacuum bomb banned by the Geneva Convention destroyed an oil product base. Russian troops dropped a vacuum bomb on an oil loading base located within the city of Akhtrika. Destroyed stocks of petroleum products, tanks, infrastructure. The explosion started a huge fire. Number of victims to be confirmed. Source, mayor of that city, Pavel Kuzmenko. And that's just one. This site goes on and on and on. Now, I had in today's What's News a report about a case being opened, a file being started. I don't know how it works in the international, court system, but there is already here. Let me see if I can't get this. My computer is not behaving well today. Okay. Let me find this story here. The International Criminal Court's top prosecutor vowed yesterday to open a formal investigation as rapidly as possible into possible war crimes and crimes against humanity in Ukraine. The inquiry would build on information that the ICC has gathered since late 2013, when protests started against the pro-Russian leader Yanukovych, who was ousted the following year. Security forces killed dozens of protesters in February of 2014. Russia then illegally annexed Crimea and backed separatists in eastern Ukraine. A preliminary report published in December of 2020 found, quote, a reasonable basis to believe war crimes had been committed. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says since Russia invaded last week, it has targeted civilians. He called Russia's shelling of Kharkiv a war crime. So I'm guessing that they're going to use all of the, and there's video and stories and photographs posted on the site of Putin's war crimes. Now, again, today, I feel like I've been batting back flies, the flies that are buzzing around Putin's face. From people going, well, you know, there are Nazis and like, enough already. I don't care. I don't care what was done 5 years ago. I don't care what was done 2 weeks ago. Vladimir Putin sent troops into a sovereign nation that did nothing to him or his country, and he is lobbing bombs at them, and he is killing innocent people. That's all I need to know. It has to stop. People are saying, oh, well, they need to negotiate. Really? Negotiate about what? What exactly? People are going, oh, well, Biden needs to say Ukraine can never join NATO. Why? First of all, it's not Biden's decision to make. The United States is a member of NATO. He should have a vote, as should the rest of the countries, right? But it's not only Biden. It's, and our guest is here. I feel so bad. Okay, real quick, I just want to play something for you. And then I'm going to, while this is playing, I'll bring Brian Karam in. And I'm going to keep an eye on my chat to see if Tatiana returns. And I'll explain to Brian Karam what's going on. In fact, there he is. You know what? Let me just bring him in. And because you know how this show runs, we're pretty informal around here. So, you know, Brian Karam is the, he's putting on his shades. Hold on 1 second. The future is so bright, man. Gotta wear shades. All right. Got it. There you go. See, I know I'm old. It's us old folks. We know our music. So yeah. Brian Karam's got a brand new book out. It's called Free the Press. And Brian, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I haven't had the chance to read it. So you're going to have to come back like in a couple of weeks after I do have a chance to read it so we can really talk about the book. Because right now, and you know, I figured your game, you'll jump in this with me because we're looking at this fucking war and it's freaking me out. And I'll tell you what else is freaking me out. All the people who are coming at me on Twitter today telling me that I'm a warmonger and I want to, you know, protect the Nazis in Ukraine. What the hell? What? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. If you're supporting Putin on this, then you are the warmonger. If you're supporting Putin on this, you're the fascist. If you're supporting Putin on this, you are not an American patriot. You are a traitor. This is Putin's chosen war that he started for no good reason at all. And the people of Ukraine are simply trying to defend themselves.
Exactly. Simply. You know, these are innocent people who are going about their lives, trying to live their lives. They've got what I believe is a great president. I'm nothing but fully impressed by Volodymyr Zelensky and have been. Right. He seems like a genuine.
I say comedians are the best people on the planet.
But of course. Hey, of course. And that's what he was before. But, you know, I don't know if you know, I do this thing where I call around the world. I call people. So last week before when we just heard that this was coming, I like to call hotels because I can generally find somebody who speaks English to answer the phone. So I called the Intercontinental Hotel in Kyiv and spoke to a very nice woman who's like no, you know what? It's fine. Things are fine here. There's problems in the east, but we're okay here. And I said, well, you know, we're hearing reports that troops are building up on the border. She's like, I'm not worried. I think we'll be okay. Everything will be okay. And this poor woman has just stayed. She's occupied a place in my head because I'm terrified for her. And I keep thinking when they invaded, she's thinking,
well, Nicole,
that woman called me from the United States. And how did she know this? And we didn't.
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, I'm not just terrified for the people of Ukraine, whether you want to acknowledge the truth or not. The fact of the matter is the entire world is now at war. Now, you can call it World War III or you can call it whatever you want. We hope it doesn't go nuclear, but we're on a precipice and a dangerous one.
Right.
And it's because there's a madman called Putin who has decided to do this. And I have children, I have grandchildren, mm-hmm. and I'm worried about their future and whether or not one will exist. And the next 6 weeks are going to be tantamount to deciding it. It's the, the funnel through which we're going to be born. It's a crucible, and we better understand that. We better be able to do something about it. And I am amazed at the amount of, first of all, you have to take a look at the, what we have done as far as, American intelligence, knowing, like you said, we knew ahead of time. That's pretty damn impressive, the amount of it. And the fact that Biden was able to put it out there and dissuade people from believing the garbage that Putin has populated the airwaves with. This war, by the way, is an excellent example of why social media is making a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. Putin has tried the old fashioned ways of propaganda. Meanwhile, you've got Zelensky on his cell phone, Zelensky on social media saying, no, hang tight. We're, I don't want to ride out of here. I need ammunition.
Exactly.
And so he's been able to rally the Ukrainian people to a point that Russia thought they'd be able to just waltz in there and not be able to and not have, much resistance. Now, I have friends and I have contacts and sources on the ground in Kyiv and elsewhere in Ukraine, and they've been enthused with the response of their troops and the people in that country, and shocked at how disorganized and how unprofessional the Russian invasion has been. So it's a very, very the next 6 weeks are going to really be very like I said, a crucible through which we're going to win, lose, or draw. And I hope the Ukrainians, are able to hold on. And I hope this doesn't turn into a hotter war.
I hope you're right. I fear because, the pushback over here is what's surprising me.
Not a surprise. We've had 5 years of Donald Trump.
Yes, but yeah. I'm seeing it from people ostensibly on the left. I hate the far left designation because I'm far left. I'm about as progressive as they come. And the shit that I'm seeing is really pissing me off. You're right. Progressive is different from far left. But there comes a point where you can go so far to the left or so far to the right that they meet in this weird etherland. Yes.
Well, I saw that in the 2016. Well, in the run up to the 2016 election, mm-hmm. at the DNC in Philadelphia, at that national convention, there were some people that were so upset that Bernie didn't get his that they were going to support Trump.
Oh God! See,
and that's to me is I mean. What?
There's no, you can't get there from here. Yeah, I was a Bernie supporter. I'm still a Bernie Sanders supporter. But of course, I voted for Hillary Clinton. I voted against Donald Trump. I voted for Joe Biden. I voted against Donald Trump. That's what exactly. You do. You want to protect our this very delicate democracy, form of democracy that we have from this onslaught. And that's what's happening. And so there's this group. I forget what they call, and I don't want to publicize them anyway. But I used to participate in events with them. I was at Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. with them in October of 2011 for Stop the Madness or whatever they called it. It was like the beginning of the Occupy movement. And these are the same people who are yelling at me. Well, there are Nazis and we're just perpetuating war. And how dare you
When somebody comes and attacks your house, you tell me that that defending yourself is you being a Nazi.
Right.
Bull. And right. By the way, this guy is a grandson of people who died. Right.
He's Jewish.
He had relatives that died because of Nazism.
Yes.
You know, part of the Holocaust. He's a survivor, you know, a descendant of the survivor of the Holocaust. And you're calling him a Nazi?
Yeah.
No, the fascist. The problem is Vladimir Putin.
Exactly.
And it's also frightening because it appears that he may have slipped a cog or two. And what you don't want is a madman with his finger on a nuclear button. And people say, have told me actually that, oh, you're making too much of this. And I'm going, no, you're not making enough of it. You don't understand how dangerous it is.
This is
the most dangerous time on the planet since I've been born. And I mean, you know, I was alive during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Wow.
It's that dangerous.
I agree. And I think of Donald Trump. I think this is how I was with Trump when he was making noises with Kim Jong-un and with, you know, it's like, oh my God, this man.
They were mating noises. I think they were trying to get together, you know.
Please, I wish they would have. And maybe they would have fucked each other into oblivion or something and leave the rest of us out of it. But, you know, I was afraid he had access to the nuclear codes and I wouldn't put it past him to do something really stupid. Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump are very much alike. They're both megalomaniacs and narcissists with huge egos who are highly insecure. And so Putin, you know, I heard someone float the idea the other day that maybe he's sick, that there's, and this is his last chance hurrah to like put the band back together again and reformulate the Soviet Union. And now that the Ukrainians are fighting back and saying, not so fast, buddy, he's getting more pissed and is going to do even more stupid things. I just wonder, Brian Karam, you hear about this convoy that's stopped some miles just outside of Kyiv. It's been there, I guess, for about 24 hours. And you got to think, they're saying it's anywhere from 17 to 40 miles long, depending what source you're reading. And those people, those vehicles are all filled with people who need to eat, who need to sleep, who need to go to the bathroom. And I don't think this was very well planned. I'm hoping that I'm right. And they're falling apart is some of the reports we're seeing.
Obviously, it wasn't well planned. That's we can see by the results. The fact that there are, and I have interviewed people who, for example, members of the defense force in Ukraine who were surprised when they captured Russian tanks and saw how dilapidated they were, saying, hey, our stuff's built better than this.
Right.
And the young Russian soldiers who were told that they were going on an extended training exercise and then found out they were in the middle of a shooting war and then being told that the Ukrainians would welcome them as, conquering heroes. And none of this has been true. And so a 40-mile-long convoy or a 70-mile-long convoy, if nothing else, is a very easy air target. So that's not very smart either. And the Russians have not established air superiority, much less air supremacy in Ukraine. So that's going in many cases can lead to a unmitigated disaster. I go back to the Gulf War when I was there. There was the Iraqis fleeing Kuwait. Uh-huh. Had a 30, 40 mile long convoy and it ended up being called, you know, the highway of death or the road of death. And there was two pilots. And I interviewed one of them who came in and just torched the whole day on convoy. So that's not real wise planning. This denotes someone who thought it was going to be easier than it was. The fact that it hasn't fallen yet. And the fact that the Ukrainians are arming themselves for urban combat, and the president is standing there going, you know, don't ship me away. Give me some bullets has caused the world. You know, you're in trouble. When the world is rallying to your cause and Switzerland, who is normally neutral, is jumping in on your side. There's an indication that maybe, just maybe, you've picked the wrong fight. So it's not good news for Russia, but it's still a very dangerous and volatile situation. And you know, we keep asking as reporters, what's the red line? What's the red line? I keep hearing that every damn day at the White House, you know, another 20 something reporter asking what's the red line. And Biden has already explained, we're not putting troops on the ground. We do not want to precipitate World War III, an honest, hot war.
Right.
And at the same time, if any of NATO's assets are struck, then we will be forced by Article 5 to defend it. Now, what that tells you is that at some point in time, there may end up being troops on the ground from the United States, because in a war situation, I've covered many shooting situations and many, I've been in many conflict zones. You cannot, with any strength of character or certainty, say, I'm not going to hit that asset, because it's a volatile environment and things, accidents happen, stray bullets, stray missiles. So it's like I said, you cannot, the fog of war, they call it. Well, hopefully the fog of war won't drag us into the fog.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I look at the human aspect of it. I can't help but think about that hotel clerk that I spoke to before the invasion happened. And then yesterday, I realized, well, people are still, journalists are staying in hotels. The people who run the hotels have to be there. And I thought, instead of trying to call a big chain where chances are whoever I talked to would get in trouble for talking to me, I pulled up a map of Kyiv. And I looked around and I saw there were a bunch of hostels there. And I saw one, and the name was in English. And I looked at it. It just looked like a very welcoming place. It's called Friends Forever Hostel in Kyiv. And so I called, and a woman
answered. Jennifer Aniston owns it?
No. But maybe she's the Ukrainian. Her name is Tatiana. And she answered the phone, and she speaks really good English, and she's the owner. And we talked for just a very brief amount of time, and I asked how we can help. What can we do to help you? She said she had been below ground for 5 days since the fighting began. So obviously in the basement. Well, now we're trading. We've been messaging back and forth all day because I asked her, what can we do to help? And she gave me a way that people can send money if they want. She said the soldiers there need walkie. She said, we're trying to raise money for walkie-talkies and helmets and uniforms. Problem is, they've been ordered. They'll be here in a few days, but we need them now. She said, what you can do is help with humanitarian aid. I said, I'm not sure, you know, what form that takes, but here's a little bit. I was going to call her at the start of the show. We've been, again, communicating back and forth all day. And she sent me a lot of information. There's a site, I don't know if you're familiar with it yet, called Nuremberg 2022, where people are documenting Putin's war crimes. And I guess, so that's kind of cool. So they're just keeping track of it. But then she sent me the photograph of the TV station that had been blown up that we lost. She didn't answer me for 2 hours. And when she finally came back online, she said, we were all this time in the shelter without communication. We do not stop sound siren. And in the photo, it is our television tower. And then I said, I wish I could come over there and just take you out. I want you to know we're thinking of you and your friends here. She said, thank you. We really feel your love and care. Soon this will all be over and we will be happy to visit each other. And the fact that she's keeping such a positive attitude is amazing. Then she told me, I have 2 sisters who live in America and 3 friends who have been invited to visit for a long time. After all this, we will definitely start traveling more. And then she said, see, when you put a human face on it, I think it helps people to understand these are human beings who are being bombed, right? She said, I understand that we're not familiar with you personally. The fact is that we have a very good hostel in the center of Kyiv. We successfully accepted thousands of foreign guests for 3 years. There were top two in the city of Kyiv. For these 6 days, they called me and wrote hundreds of people who were visiting us. I read every message with tears in front of our eyes and thank people for such good attitude. Thank you so much that you're interested in our events from the first sources. So
send me her contact and anyone else that you've contacted. And when I get over there, I will make sure that I get videotapes of them and send them back to you and send you their messages.
Now, when
I have a kid I coached in high school football who's teaching English to Ukrainians, and he's stuck over there and he'll be my interpreter when we get there. But there are people that are extreme. It's a dire situation. Don't anyone take this, you know, for granted. Don't anyone think this can't happen here. Don't anyone think that this is just an isolated incident. This is a madman trying to reestablish the Soviet Union and has promised war on those who don't give him what he wants.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People are not, and Ukrainians are not going gentle into that good night. It's a frustrating thing for him. He expected to have this sewn up by now. And the longer it goes on, the more difficult it will become for him.
And the more crazier he'll get, probably.
Well, and there's two issues there. One is, you know, they keep saying, well, these, you know, the people who are criticizing Biden at this point are saying that, you know, the sanctions, why haven't the sanctions worked yet? And he said, look, give them a month.
Yeah.
And I you know, and see how it works. Now, it is not going to go well for Russia. Mm-mm. And particularly Putin. His personal wealth has been pretty much seized at this point. But more importantly, it's the oligarchs and the richest people that have his ear, and he has their ear in Russia. When they start getting hit as they have, at some point in time, the idea of these restraints and these sanctions is to make it difficult for Putin to operate and give the Russian people, and particularly the powerful, rich Russian people, mm-hmm. an incentive to make sure that this doesn't go on, which could mean one of two things. Either they convince him to pull out, or they convince him to, in whatever way is possible, not to be the leader of Russia anymore. I mean, those are really the two, those are the two end games out of sanctions. And it's really kind of a genius thing and it's pretty impressive that as many people, as many countries has signed on to these sanctions as have signed on. More importantly, it's what Germany has done.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because Putin was not counting on the response from Germany. This was a new, chancellor of Germany. And at first he didn't think he'd be on board with some of this stuff, but he involved the SWIFT with banking sanctions. And it was after, and here's another thing. And this is why I get so upset with Democrats, because, you know, they just don't communicate what they do worth right. a damn.
Oh, they don't. They don't know how to take a bow. Worst. Right. They don't know how to toot their own horn.
I mean, it was after the German chancellor spoke to and visited Biden that these things happened. So you can't get them to go, you know, if it was Donald Trump, he'd go, well, he did it. You know, he did it because of me. It was a beautiful thing.
It's all because of me. NATO wouldn't exist if I wasn't here. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And the Democrats are horrible, and they do not communicate at all.
Right.
There's so much airtime that's being sucked up by the Republicans still. And the Democrats haven't learned that the one thing Donald Trump did, and the one thing that made him as successful as he was getting elected, and why we're still talking about this SOB, no good traitorous today, uh-huh. is because he will stand in front of the microphone with his pants down, yelling and screaming at the top of his lungs, and people pay attention to him. The Democrats are, you know, I'm above that. I'm yep. not going to talk about it. And as a result, they're getting crushed.
That's right.
Which is why Biden is getting, you know, I look forward to the State of the Union address tonight to see if he's going to come out with energy and verve and convince people, you know, that what he's doing works. I mean, because it has in many instances, but they're their own worst enemy
yep.
because they do not know how to communicate. And there are two places where it's killing them: in the polls for the midterm, and when people say, what have you, you know, are we doing enough to help people in Ukraine? And in both cases, you know, I just shake my head and go, you know, I've gone in the White House and said, you all need to get out in front of the people more. And they go, well, we actually think we need to talk less. I go, well, yes, you're an idiot. That's stupid.
Really?
You know, what the hell are you talking about? Talk less.
Right.
You've got something to talk about. If Trump were president and had passed an infrastructure package on the scale that Biden has passed,
yeah.
we would not hear the end of it.
Right. And they don't even mention it. We don't hear anything about it.
I would be taking a victory lap all the way to the midterms with this, going, hey, clean water. Hey, clean roads. Hey, streets, paved.
Bridges.
Hey,
fixed bridges.
Yeah, bridges, roads. Us. I did this. Instead, we're hearing about mask mandates
instead,
and Dr. Fauci.
And instead, in states like Florida, where I live, you got idiots like moron death sentence saying, hey, I got all this money. We're going to revitalize the Everglades. We're going to do this. Yeah. They've all fought against it. Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, Voldemort.
By the way, don't say the word gay.
Oh, God. No, you're not allowed to. Don't say gay. And
I'm just going to go out there and go, I'm gay. I don't give a shit. I'm so tired of them because I live here. I can imagine. It is disgusting. How can you claim to be an American patriot and back Vladimir Putin?
I have no idea. And now you notice that Fox has all of a sudden done an about face because they saw the polling and the American people are not with Putin and Russia. They see what's happening. And all of a sudden now Tucker Carlson goes from, why should we back? Why Ukraine? What democracy? What? I'd go with Putin to, I never said I would back Putin.
Or Kayleigh McEnany. That's another moron of biblical proportions. Now speaking, you know, what a patriot. Yeah, this is the one who defended bone spurs. These people will say anything for ratings, which is, by the way, and there's a plug for the book.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because we are tethered. Journalism is tethered to capitalism. Mm-hmm. And I am a happy capitalist. Go out and buy as many copies of my book as you want. Buy early, buy often. But journalism should not be tethered to capitalism, because when that happens, you get news that you want to buy instead of news that you need to see.
Well, and again, and that's what happened. All right, let's move on from Russia and Ukraine for a moment here, because at the beginning of the book, I did get to start reading it, but I'm interviewing Stephen Van Zandt tomorrow night, and I just got his book too. And I'm, you know, I got your book, I got his book, I got another book that I'm, it's like, I got Stevie coming up. I have one shot with him. You'll come back. We'll talk. Yeah. You'll come back. But, you know, he's. I was going to say Miami Steve. It shows how old I am and what a long-term fan I've been. So anyway, trying to read that one, but I did crack it. And you talked about the fairness doctrine at the beginning. Used to be, you know, when I got into radio in the old times, I worked at a talk radio station. I produced one of the forerunners to today's right-wing hate talk radio. I produced Bob Grant at WMCA in New York. And And I was this 22-year-old and I would fight with him. I would stand up to him, and he really liked me because I had balls and I wouldn't take his shit. But I had to put out, if he got into a subject, I would have to invite the opposing viewpoint to come on and provide another. I'm a pack rat. So I still have letters from Pat Buchanan when he was at the White House saying, thanks, I appreciate the opportunity, but it's okay. They did that. Now there is no pretense to get both sides of the story. And we have this organization, I won't call them news, I call them Fox Not News, because they're not, who would not be able to do what they do over the air, because over the air, they're governed by the FCC, who has regulations saying you can't call yourselves news if it's not news. They can do it on cable. They can't do it over the air. But
that's why you need an extension of you need to reintroduce the fairness doctrine
completely.
And have an extension of that into the internet and streaming and
cable.
And it can be done in cable. It could be done.
But we don't. It's not there now.
Right. Well, there in the book, I point to like three or four things that I think are necessary for us to be successful to reinstituting journalism. One is a reintroduction of the fairness doctrine.
Yes.
Two, I think we have to put roadblocks back up to ownership.
Please.
And you can't have the Alden Group of venture capitalists owning 200 or 300 newspapers and gutting them.
They just bought the Miami Herald and you could see it already. You can see
it. At iHeartRadio. Look what it's done to radio. Same thing. And
I lived through that.
Yeah. And that's part of the book is a personal journey of 40 years of watching every place I've ever worked downsize or go out of existence.
Yep.
It's been a tough, you know, there are very few of us left in this that have put in this amount of time in journalism. And in fact, most people who are in journalism today don't spend, you know, an entire career in it.
Right.
They're in and out. And the most devastating, I think there needs to be a national shield law to protect reporters so they don't go to jail for confidential sources.
Good. Yes. I'm with you on all that.
The upshoot of all the constriction in the business and the downsizing is the fact that, and this is evident, when I was in the White House Monday, and I was, there were only one or two other people my age or older in the White House. I have had people come up to me and ask me, how do I do this? How do I do that? And I give them credit for at least wanting to know how it's done correctly, because many of them think that they've graduated high school and college and their first job is at the White House. And so they must be the smartest people on the planet. Right. And they're the dumbest shit you'll ever meet in your life. And it's, you know, I to the point where we're asking in the briefing room, we're asking, do we think that what's going, if we don't change what's going on, is there going to be a war in Ukraine? And Jen Psaki going, there is a war.
Hello.
Or does this mean we're going to have a permanent, are we going to have troops permanently placed in Europe now? Well, we've had that since, you know, like the end of World War II. We ask the dumbest damn questions. There are most of the reporters in there I have no respect for. And their questions, you know, I sit there, I've spoken to Psaki after the briefings and she goes, I saw you rolling your eyes. And I go, yeah, because we're stupid. And I, you know, I had one of them come up to me and I won't say what network they were talking. I won't say what network they were with, but they said, you know, looking at me and going, hey, asking me questions. I said, oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks for asking. I said, you know, I'll tell you, because my mentors were Sam Donaldson and Helen Thomas, and they would tell me anything.
Right.
You know, so and I said, so what are you, are you an intern? And this person said, no, I'm a senior reporter. I go, how old are you? And they said, 24. I said, how old is the junior producer?
Oh, my God.
12. You know, what the fiddlestick is that?
Right.
I mean, you the first day I walked into the White House, Helen Thomas introduced me. I knew Sam from the 1984 presidential campaign. And my greatest claim to fame at that young age was I got to outshout Sam Donaldson for a question.
Oh, then you must have been loud. By the way, yes. He writes the foreword to your book.
Yes.
So let me just put
great
that,
guy.
That out.
And Sam says, I often he says, Brian, look at that first row in the Brady briefing room, that first row of seats there. There's about 200 years of experience there. Listen to all of them. And then he made a joke and he said, by the way, most of that is owned by Helen. And Helen turned and said something smart to Sam. And Sam said, hey, Helen, it's okay to have an unexpressed thought. And Helen said to Sam, when it comes to you, I have a lot of unexpressed thoughts. And I didn't know what else I was going to do for the rest of my life, but I knew that day was great. And
right. We all have those moments. That was a moment. Yeah. That's a moment.
Yeah. Those two pros, and they all, you know, the experience and the gravitas, they didn't take themselves, you know, seriously. Mm-hmm. They took the job seriously. And they understood that it took a great deal of experience to know the job. And you can't just walk in and sit in the briefing room and ask questions and claim that you're covering the president of the United States. That's not how you do it.
Right.
Jen Psaki did not get elected president. Joe Biden did. Mm-hmm. I need to see him. I need to ask him questions.
Sure.
And that was the same with Trump. And so there are too many young reporters who don't know what they're doing. And the whole country is suffering as a result.
Yeah. And they think it's all about, ooh, I can get off the best zinger. The Ducey guy. Oh, my God. Why? How, is he there because his father is on Fox and Fiends, or what's the deal?
Fox and Fiends.
That's what I call them. They're not my friends. They're fiends. Sorry. I leave out an R.
You know, look, I'm the guy who will defend anybody being in that room.
Yeah.
So I defend Ducey being there.
Such an asshole. I mean, well, do your job, but don't be a jerk.
Here's the thing. But his fans love him. That's not the problem. And there's another guy in there who's he's a far right Christian guy. And he tried to accuse me of bullying him one day. He came in and we have very specific guidelines. He's not vaxxed.
Oh, God.
And he's one of these guys that are a bit of a close talker. So he's in my and I push. I said, look, I love you. 6 feet away.
Right. Or like Putin, 20 feet away.
And you're not vaxxed. Stay 6 feet. And you've already got it once. 6 feet away. And he said, oh, I feel like I should wear a yellow star. And I said,
God.
Look, nobody's putting you in an oven. Just treat everybody else with respect and get vaccinated. And he said, well, some Christians in this country. And I looked at him, I said, I'm a Christian in this country. Shut the fuck up and go get vaxxed. And so he tried to make that go viral, saying that I had bullied him. And I was actually thanked, you know, the first one of the few times I've ever worked in the White House where both the WHCA and the White House thanked me for giving the guy grief. But, you know, I still defend him being there. The problem is not that Ducey is there and people think he's an idiot, or this guy's there and he's an idiot. Look, anybody should be welcome. That's the great melting pot.
Even the OAN spokesmodel woman.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, anyone should be there. I mean, when I first went to that White House, there was a guy, and I always forget his name, and John Roberts always remembered his name at Fox. We all remembered him. But there was a defrocked minister who always asked questions about Bigfoot and Area 51. And in fact, Mike McCurry, who he would walk in with this big briefing book. He sat it down. I remember this day very well. Sat the briefing book down and he's talking, and he called on this guy. And the guy said, isn't it true you're keeping those illegal aliens from the planet Zumbar or whatever it was at Area 51? And so McCurry takes him very serious, and he starts going through he goes, well, can you answer? And he goes, what? And so he's going through the pages. He's going through the pages. And finally he goes, oh yeah, no. Moving on. And that was And afterwards, they asked him, he said, why do you call on the guy? He goes, because he makes the rest of you look like idiots.
Right.
So anybody can be there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to call on them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the thing. So why do they call on him? It's all politics. That briefing has turned into an information gathering device to a show me on TV and make me look cool device for my fans.
Well, it became this spectacle during the Trump reign of whatever it was.
Yeah, and I was accused of making it a spectacle simply because I wouldn't take a shit. But
you asked real questions, but you know that they didn't want real questions. They wanted to quote George Bush. They wanted to propel the propaganda or whatever.
Well, and I would say that Biden is as controlling and doesn't want to take real questions either.
I'm not very happy with
how they operate that communication staff.
Right. And I understand the Obama White House was not very press friendly either. So this goes on both sides.
But there
comes a point where if it's a responsible press, then I'll put all the blame on the administration. But when it's a press trying to one up each other and do the Fox thing, then you know what? It's just a circus.
That comes from, as I point out in the book, another plug for the book. Huh? But as I point out in the book, that's the problem, because you have people with no experience going in there thinking they know everything, and they have no qualms telling you what they think when what they think. My children were past that when they were 12 or 13. I mean, these are young, ignorant people who are also arrogant and don't want to learn how it's done. And the country is suffering. Now, you can blame the proximate man, and I do. If I had that job and I was 22, 23 years old and I happened to luck into it, I would bust my ass to try and know as much as possible to be good at it rather than just to look good at it. But the systemic problem stems from the fact that the government has systematically destroyed the First Amendment and the Fourth Estate over the last 40 years.
Right.
Nixon tried to start it with Roger Ailes. Ronald Reagan got it started with Roger Ailes, who, by the way, gave us Mitch McConnell and dismantled the free speech by dismantling everything, all the guardrails that kept us in place, including, you know, the fairness doctrine.
Right. Right. Now, Brian Carroll, I want to ask you something that's related, but a little bit veers off a little bit.
Anything you want.
Okay.
I'm all yours. So, even though you like Stephen Van Zandt more than me.
He's a rock star. I know you're in a band too, but you know, you don't play with Bruce. So what can I tell you? Play with Bruce Springsteen, then we'll talk.
I have played with someone who is Niels Lofgren and his brother, Mike Lofgren in Maryland, but. Yeah. Well, been on the same stage with them, but never with Bruce.
Never with Bruce. See, me either. I've never interviewed Bruce, and that's one that, and I've interviewed many, many, many rock stars because I came from music radio. But anyway, here's my question. it has been made apparent over the last few days, and I already knew this, but now it's like out there, that on every military base, an installment in the mess hall, in public spaces, Fox, the Fox Not News channel, plays. It's there. Why? Yeah. It's propaganda, and it's anti-government propaganda.
It's anti-American propaganda.
They don't do news. It's a fictionalized account of whatever they're making up. It's, yeah, I don't know if you've heard my Fox News sounder, I think, but if you haven't, I'll share it with you again, because it's all.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
They make shit up. That's their slogan. So that's what plays on military bases, really? Well, our fighting men and women are already in a weird cultural vacuum. And now you're feeding them this right-wing propaganda that's just horrible. Why?
Well, I think it's not just Fox News that's on bases.
That's
although
what I hear.
On some I have seen exclusively Fox News. But the bigger question is, why would there be exclusivity of any
right.
network on? Why not allow the troops to watch what they want?
Mm-hmm.
That's the bigger question. But
the thing is, they might think they want Fox now because that's what they're being given. But
yeah, well,
it's dangerous.
That's the problem of being in those informational silos, as I call it. You know, where you just hear echo, it's an echo chamber. So you hear what it's they suck. And that's all you hear. And you don't ever hear the other side because there is no fairness doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
But that should, the bigger issue is, why would you have an exclusive news for anybody?
Good question. It shouldn't be. And
yeah.
And I worry that they're being, Trump and his ilk talk about indoctrinating our school children. You're indoctrinating our armed forces into this anti-American thought. You have Tucker Carlson. Are you kidding me? Being kind of forced on our military.
Yeah. Well,
that's dangerous.
That's like force feeding people, like stale manure. But that guy is a menace and has been for years. And I love the chance to, pull that little bow tie off of his neck, but that's another story. But what is frightening to me is that what the press has become in this country, unless we look, you got to break up media monopolies.
Yes.
There are only, when I first got into this business, 80% of what you see, read, or hear was run by approximately 24 companies.
Mm-hmm.
Today, more than 90% of what you see, read, or hear are run by 5.
Yeah, that's about right.
And let me tell you, folks, none of those are liberally biased. Okay.
No, nope.
There's no rich white guys in boardrooms going, gosh, we need to have more liberal voices. What you have are rich white guys sitting in these boardrooms going, I need more money.
Yep.
And so there are media companies in this country that are more powerful communicating than many nations.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. There are, and I always give this example. I worked in Laredo, Texas in 1983 and 84, I think it was. At that time, there were 100,000 people in that town. There were 2 newspapers in English, 1 in Spanish, 3 television stations in English, 1 in Spanish, the 2 new and 3 radio stations, and all of them did news for 100,000 people. There were probably maybe 40 or 50 reporters in the city,
mm-hmm.
probably more because of the newspapers, maybe 100, 150. Today, there are 300,000 people 40 years later.
Right.
There are 3 times the number of people, 300,000 people,
yep.
and there's 1 television station and 1 newspaper.
Yep. And they're probably owned by the same company because that's happening now, too.
Yeah. And that's the problem. And so when newspapers buy each other up, like Gannett bought the Courier Journal where I worked. And so, they go, well, what do I need a reporter in D.C. Bureau for? I already have a D.C. Yep. Bureau reporter that already reports for 20 other papers. I don't need you. So they cut costs. And they always say this is going to be good for journalism.
No.
Well, it's good for the bottom line. but it's never good for journalism. I have never seen anybody, you know, like they told us when computers came into the newsroom, oh, this is going to, it's a cost cutting measure. Okay. Where did you reinvest it in your product?
Right.
Well, you didn't.
Right.
So what you end up with are, you know, television, radio, and newspapers that look like brand new Cadillacs, but they don't have any engine. And so that's the problem with journalism. Too few people have too much power and too few hands. There are twice the number of people on this planet is on the day that I was born and half the number of reporters.
Yeah.
So that's why Fox News gets away with what it gets away with. That's why we're not really sure what's going on in our own government. There are whole parts of our government that remain uncovered. There are vast news deserts in this country where there are no community newspapers. They used to have regulations for, you know, notices, public notices to let you know, estate sales, you know, when people were collapsing their businesses, you know, bankruptcy. And by the way, this Friday or next Tuesday will be the city council meeting. They don't do that anymore.
No.
So those small newspapers that existed and thrived on that money made from those ads, they've gone away.
Right.
And transparency in government doesn't exist.
Right. And, you know, OK, so you come out of newspapers. I come from radio. Radio was always the local business, local.
Yeah.
That was the thing about radio is you're in the community. You serve the community. In fact, to get your license renewed, there was something called ascertainment, where you would have to go out into the community and to ascertain the top 10 issues facing your community and do a report that's in your public file that says how you are addressing those needs, how you're serving your community. And anybody could go into the station and say, I want to look at your public file. And they could. All that's gone. Right. None of that.
Now
you don't even have to have a studio in the city of license. Used to be you had to have a studio. You didn't have to have any people there, but you had to have a studio. Now you don't even have that.
No, you're right. And, you know, people forget that the biggest revolution in the news and in news cycle was not cable. Mm-hmm. It was not television. It wasn't the internet. It was radio. That created the revolution that everything else has been modeled on since then. Newspapers owned breaking news, extra, extra, read all about it. You know, and that was the how you got breaking news until radio came in.
Right. Then radio could be right there.
There was a specific incident in 1937, the 37 flood in the eastern part of the United States, where, you know, the fledgling networks at that time, I think CBS and a few others were 5 to maybe 7 or 8 years old. And they came in and broadcast 24/7 the, you know, this horrible flood that were stranding people, killing people. You know, and that was the beginning of the modern news cycle. Mm-hmm. And everything since then, television, right, cable, live streaming, internet, all of them have imitated what radio did. The difference between then and now is that there were guardrails in place to make sure that news was broadcast, which is why radio was so effective, which why radio was built,
right,
which was why television was built. And now it's being dismantled. And thank you, every president since Ronald Reagan, for doing it.
That's right.
Every single one of them.
And Bill Clinton gets the crown prize.
1996. Yes.
Telecommunications Act of 1996. I'll never forget. I'm living in Los Angeles at the time, right? I produced the top rated morning show in LA, the Mark and Brian show. I get a letter for email from AFTRA saying, watch out. There's this legislation coming and it's going to destroy our industry. I remember that moment and everything they predicted in that letter came true. Everything.
Yeah. And if you take a look at what happened in our industry, I mean, prior to Ronald Reagan, and look, he was the one who kicked us down the slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to Ronald Reagan, and at the beginning of Ronald Reagan's tenure, there were unions. Remember those?
I do.
There were unions who were lobbying Congress to limit ownership of newspapers to 20, radio and television stations to a handful.
Yep.
And you couldn't own a radio, television, and newspaper in the same city.
Nope.
In the same market.
That's right.
Ronald Reagan, guess who he gave an exception to on that? Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, an Australian, right? So forget, you know, rules on who can own media in the United States.
Sure, and that's when it all started to change.
Yep.
And that's what that was, you know, people want to give Trump grief, and I'm among them. But he's a symptom of, not a cause of, the problem.
That's true.
He's what happened after 40 years of setting the table. That fat buck just came in and started eating from it. That's all it is. I mean, he's not, you know, he took advantage because he's a con man and a grifter.
That's right.
And he's the exact example. If you want to say anything, he's the example of why we had all the guardrails. This is what we didn't want.
That's right.
And now we've accepted it. And that's, I can't, I will not go gentle into that. Good night.
Good.
We need to bust up the media monopolies. We need to stress community journalism. We need newspaper. You know, people say newspapers are dead. Sure, they are. We killed them.
Yeah.
But there's a value to a newspaper it's invaluable. I can walk into a court of law today with a newspaper, and I have a copy of it from 1855. Hell, I've got a newspaper from 1814. Guess what? It reads the same today as it did then.
You
can't hack it. You can't change it. And in a court of law, it's very finite and very valuable. You cannot dispute this is unless you have, you know, later clarifications and later printing.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot change it. I can go into the internet and hack the crap out of it, and you'll never know what the real what reality is.
No.
That's the world we live in. So there is a value to newspapers, and they would still be valuable today if we invested in them and had reporters, investigative reporters, actually doing real reporting.
That's right.
Don't you want to know if, you know, we may disagree at the top level about national policy. There may be a racist next door to you. There may be a fascist across the street from you. But I guarantee you that every one of them wants paved streets, electricity, clean water. And why is that stoplight not working down the street?
Right.
All that. And by God, I want my kids to go to a decent school. Why is it that I drink water and I drop dead? All of those things build communities. Don't tear them apart. We have far more in common than we have different from each other. But because we don't have community journalism, we're not building communities. We're ripping them apart.
Right. I couldn't agree more. Brian Karam, the book is out. It is called Free the Press. And it's available now. And you're going to come back on again after I've had the chance to read it. Now, when are you going to Ukraine?
Probably within the week.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I will, Brian is on Twitter at Brian Karam, K-A-R-E-M. Follow him. And you'll keep us posted on what's going on. When you get back, we'll talk. You know,
yeah, it's a 2-week trip. So we're going to go shoot a documentary and then try to get some of the refugees, some of the action that go from Kyiv to other areas. So that's why I really do contact me about the people.
I certainly will. With. And, you know, I've been watching my Telegram app here waiting for Tatiana to come back because I was supposed to call her at the top of the show at 5:00 Eastern. Well, at 3:38 Eastern, I get a message from her that says, "We have an air alarm. We run to the basement."
And I
haven't heard from her since.
And she's probably in the basement. God bless her. I hope she's doing all right.
Me too.
And here's the thing. That is, again, is an example. It brings people together.
That's it.
And so the propaganda that this asshole Putin is putting out there is falling on deaf ears, and people are seeing Hitler could not be successful or as successful today as he was in World War II because he would be crushed by social media.
Right. And remember, I think that's happening to Putin now. The world is against him, thank God.
Even the Chinese are going, oh, wait a minute. I'm telling you, it's a tough room. I don't know.
Yeah, it's
you know,
just the Trumpers. The Trumpers are on his side.
Who got a special Pulitzer last year? It was the young woman who shot the video of someone putting his knee on the neck.
George Floyd's neck.
And killing George Floyd. That is journalism. And so remember, it doesn't take a professional journalist to do journalism. An act of journalism can inform and change the world.
You got that right. Brian Karam, it's always such a pleasure to talk with you. And I knew you'd be cool with just changing topic because we're living this now. I know. I do know you enough
now. You just crushed me with the Stevie Van Zandt stuff.
Well, I'll send you the interview when it's done. I promise it'll be a good one.
Yeah.
You can listen to it on the way over to Ukraine.
Yeah,
you have a lot of time to fill. Free the Press is available now. Buy it. Follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Karam. And listen to his podcast as well. Just ask the question.
There you go.
There you go.
Just ask it. That was advice from Helen to me. So
there you go.
I take it.
I live it. So good advice. Brian, thank you so much. And
you're welcome.
Safe travels.
You too.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. You are. So, safe travels. All right. We'll talk soon. Take care. Bye-bye. Uh-huh. All right. And with that, we're done. That's a, what day is today? Tuesday. It's a Tuesday. Hopefully I'll talk to Tatiana. I keep now my Telegram app open at all times. I'm hoping she comes back soon, out of the basement and is safe, because I'm worried about her. So we'll try to get her on tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're also supposed to speak with Andy Lee Roth of Project Censored. So that should be fun, or at least interesting. All right. I will leave you with the news. I'll see you tomorrow. As always, thank you for listening. And stay safe, everyone. And beat back the liars and the propagandists. Don't let them get away with it. All right. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it through February. Welcome to March. Today is also Fat Tuesday, and tonight, President Biden delivers his first State of the Union address. Today is also the official start of the midterm election season as dozens of primaries take place, most notably in Texas, where new restrictive voting rules have caused mass confusion and could disproportionately affect seniors and people of color. It's now harder to vote by mail. Thousands of early ballots have already been rejected. You can't vote by drive-through anymore. And there are no more 24-hour polling places. And it's day 6 of Vladimir Putin's assault on Ukraine. The UN has now reported that more than 500,000 refugees have left Ukraine, mostly going to Poland or Moldova. The news coming out of Ukraine is disconcerting. Civilian casualties are rising as Russia, who's been unable to penetrate Ukraine's largest cities, is now resorting to more indiscriminate shelling. Biden officials told House members in a classified briefing on Monday that 1,500 civilian and military casualties have occurred since the invasion began. U.S. officials are now pointing to Kyiv, the destination for a 40-mile-long convoy of Russian troops and military hardware that's approaching the city Tuesday morning. But British Defense Intelligence said early Tuesday that, quote, the Russian advance on Kyiv has made little progress over the past 24 hours, probably as a result of continuing logistical difficulties, and that Russia has failed to gain control of the airspace over Ukraine. U.S. officials are warning the sheer number of Russian troops could overcome the Ukrainian resistance. Satellite images show the massive convoy passing through the outskirts of Kyiv as smoke rises from what appear to be burning homes left behind this convoy in its path. Ukraine is appealing to the international community to come to its aid as U.S. officials warn that Vladimir Putin could imminently increase the intensity of the attack. Negotiations for a potential ceasefire ended Monday, with a Ukrainian official saying only that both sides would return to their capitals for consultations over whether to implement a number of decisions. Meanwhile, more than 400 civilians have already been killed or injured since Russia attacked Ukraine last week. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Monday officially signed an application for Ukraine's membership in the European Union. He also spoke via video to the EU, thanking the countries for agreeing to supply them with arms to defend itself against a Russian invasion, and to call for the European Union to admit Ukraine without delay. His impassioned pleas obviously affected the interpreters.
We are fighting just for our land and for our freedom. Despite the fact that all large cities of our country are now blocked, nobody is going to enter and intervene with our freedom and country. And believe you me, every square of today, no matter what it's called, it's going to be called, as today, Freedom Square in every city of our country. Nobody's going to break us. We're strong. We're Ukrainians.
The International Criminal Court's top prosecutor vowed on Monday to open a formal investigation into possible war crimes and crimes against humanity in Ukraine. This inquiry would build on information the ICC has gathered since late 2013, when protests started against pro-Russian leader Viktor Yanukovych, who was ousted the following year. A preliminary report published in December of 2020 found, quote, a reasonable basis to believe war crimes had been committed. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says since Russia invaded last week, it has been targeting civilians. He called Russia's shelling of Kharkiv a war crime. By the way, a website has been launched to collect facts about Putin's many war crimes. It's at Nurnberg2022.org. It's spelled N-U-R-N-B-E-R-G 2022.org. In news closer to home, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson will hold meetings with top Democratic and Republican senators beginning Wednesday as the confirmation process for Biden's nominee to the Supreme Court gets underway. Democrats are hoping for a swift bipartisan confirmation process for the U.S. District Court judge, who'd make history as the first Black woman to sit on the highest court in the nation. Biden officially nominated Jackson to the Supreme Court on Friday, praising her as a, quote, nominee of extraordinary qualifications, whose opinions are carefully reasoned, tethered to precedent, and demonstrate respect for how the law impacts everyday people. Senate Republicans on Monday blocked a House-passed bill aimed at preserving access to abortion in this country. The House had passed the legislation, dubbed the Women's Health Protection Act, back in September, even though the bill wasn't expected to have the necessary votes to pass the 50-50 Senate. And, as anticipated, the Senate blocked the measure on a nearly party-line vote. Yeah, Joe Manchin of West Virginia voted with all the Republicans in opposition. The vote was 46 to 48. The bill's failure to advance in the Senate comes as Republican-led states have introduced and advanced bills across the country that make it harder for women to access abortions and threaten healthcare providers who perform the procedure. And then there are three Republicans in the House who actually voted against an anti-lynching bill Monday night. They would be Andrew Clyde of Georgia, Tom Massey of Kentucky, and Chip Roy of Texas. They all voted no on the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, which was sponsored by Congressman Bobby Rush of Illinois. The bill passed on a vote of 422-3. Unbelievable. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.